The new year is the perfect moment to set your family up for success, including finding a school that finally fits the way your child learns. Introducing K-12 Powered Schools, tuition-free, accredited online public schools for grades K through 12. With K-12, students move at their own pace, with state-certified teachers who bring lessons to life through interactive, hands-on technology. If your child needs a school that adapts to them, K-12 can help unlock their full potential. Learn more at k12.com/podcast.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. My name is Blake Howard. This is the One Heat Minute Productions Patreon preliminarily exclusive podcast where we look back on the films of decades past, 10 years in our review, to see the films that are still resonating, still hanging around potentially and influencing, you know, modern cinema, and also those who are ripe for revisiting. Today, I'm talking to my dear friend Stu Coote, One Heat Minute Hall of Famer, Chief Instigator. Here he is. Say hello, Stu.
Good evening.
We're talking about a much forgotten franchise, Star Wars, I think it is called. The film we're talking about, holy shit, I remember exactly where I saw this. I saw this in a wretched hive of scum and villainy that is Event Cinemas in George Street on a midnight session. The film is The Force Awakens. It is J.J. Abrams' directed episode 7 in the franchise. Have a listen to a cool and very titillating trailer before Stu and I come back and reminisce about 10 years since Star Wars was revitalized, refreshed, and brought back to our big and now small screens.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Stuku, tell me about your first night. I remember seeing this. We weren't together, but I think you saw a midnight screening. You saw a midnight screening.
I did. I went to Macquarie Shopping Centre with my sister and my brother-in-law, and that was the first of 11 viewings in cinemas in that initial release. I will declare a bias at the outset. I wasn't, I was in personally in a bit of a rough spot at the time, in a sort of a relationship very much in decline. And this became sort of my safe place. When in doubt, duck off to the movies to go. And I became obsessed with The Force Awakens in a very short period. And like all new Star Wars releases, we've had the benefit of living through a few now. You want it to be, for me, as familiar as the rest of the episodes to that date. So in that, I just dove head first. I think there was some days when I caught it two times in the same day, just to, it was my sort of meditative state to go into. But also, I flat out adored it. I still do. It's got its flaws. It's got its, you know, you've remember when you were, used to be little and you'd put the baking paper over a thing to trace
yeah.
another picture. It is fair to say that J.J. Abrams on maybe some direction from Disney and Lucasfilm may have put the baking paper over the top of A New Hope and
some of Empire in there as well.
And some of Empire. And, you know, which is fine. It was a big, I don't know really, everyone, I guess, Star Wars is such a beloved franchise. And we brought this up recently on a hot take. Everyone has their version of what Star Wars is.
Yes.
It's like it's like porn. It's hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. And so really, you bring in someone like a J.J. Abrams, you get Hollywood's best chameleon. He can do the best impression of just about anyone's style you want. So for all of the you know, apart from the lens flares and the over polished flaws, the super shiny flaws on everything, doesn't not look like A New Hope in many ways. Like there has been sort of a loving recreation of things visually. Does it, you know, take big steps in any direction for the franchise? Not really, but you know, you could see a company that was very risk averse after Lucas did that with the prequels. And I know everyone is now looking back with these rose colored glasses, some, you know, the 25 years and the 30 year or close to 30 years back to a Phantom Menace where they're like, oh, hang on, no, actually, we love them. And
well, no, George Lucas we were kids. We were kids. We saw them. We wanted to love them. We wanted to love them as much, but we know in our hearts that we didn't.
They weren't, and they weren't like they were. They were held close, and you defended them on the playground against everyone that came for them. And that generation is now grown up, and they're now not accepting the next iteration. That's fine. I still think this movie is a shit ton of fun to watch. Yeah, it rips off all the best portions and has some of the weaknesses of those other films, but it's just fun. Like this thing, it moves at a clip. It does. I saw
it at the time, midnight screening. I walked out and I really enjoyed it. I just want to say that it did enough for me to introduce us to the old characters again. It took away some of the, I guess, digital polish of George's, you know, the inner working of George's, you know, full expanse of his imagination, which is so impressive, right? Like his imagination is boundless. The R.M. Macquarie inspiration art that like sort of kicked off the original trilogy being able to be made, and just sort of the boundlessness of his impression and the vivid nature of his world. But it just, the technology kind of screws everyone over because it's, you know, whenever you're a trailblazer, you're never using perfected technology. You're kind of breaking new ground constantly. So there are flaws in those as far as they look. I really liked being able to go back to this in 2015 and seeing like so much of what was tactile about it, so much of the tactile landscape, so much of the tactile outfit, so much of the tactile aliens. I just loved all of those bits and pieces. And I kind of liked where the story was going. It had those anchors. It had enough potential, especially then, that I really enjoyed and I had a really great time. And this is the other thing that has become really appreciable. I know we're sort of jumping ahead, but there's a couple of people at work that I work with at my day job, like knowing that I'm a movie fan, like we're like, oh, here's such and such. She's 20. She doesn't know who Keanu Reeves is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, and so Keanu's a great character. Because it's like, sorry, a great character as and an individual in a movie star, because essentially he makes a movie in the 80s, which is super popular. He then becomes an action star in the 90s, like has these bookends or like, you know, kind of three massive action movies and then sci-fi that leaps and bridges between millennia. That he has another massive hit in sort of the 2010s. And then now in the 2020s, he's also still got these huge movies. So it's like Keanu is like Bill and Ted. And then Then he's like in Speed. Then he's Johnny Utah in Point Break. Then he's Neo in the freaking Matrix. Then he's John Wick. It's like, this is a guy. So this person's like, oh yeah, I think I know. I think I've seen that guy before, like on an Instagram reel or a TikTok or something.
Yeah, I think he's in a meme somewhere. Like I've seen him do a goofy, I've seen him do like a goofy salute and a gif or something. Like,
so for someone to say that they didn't see a movie from 2002 or they don't even know who Keanu Reeves is, it doesn't surprise me anymore, or I don't have as much preciousness about people kind of like retreading some familiar territory, because there are just audiences who are completely out of the loop, right, on this. And so I, looking back on it, that was my experience, and it was overall like well reviewed. Yeah, it did a good job. Excited to see where this new series goes. A lot of big questions, you know, like we'd seen the Empire's demise, and we see this thing take place years later, and we hear about people in exile. We see the Empire reemerge with the First Order. It's like this crazy thing. It's like, how did this happen? We will not in this conversation be going down any roads that lead us towards any discussion of what you think of The Last Jedi, because in the greatest respect, I don't give a flying fuck what anyone thinks about really anything, but particularly that movie, because too much writing talking has been done about that. I just don't want to talk about it. The thing I would say though is we're now talking about 10 years, which seems crazy, right? Like 10 years of Star Wars back on the big screen and small. So we've gone through an entire new trilogy, Rogue One. We've gone through
Solo,
another movie in Solo, Obi-Wan, which was originally written as a feature length film, but then broken into a TV series, Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Ahsoka, new series of the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels,
Bad Batch.
And like now these, what are they called? The Tales of
and Visions.
Tales and Visions of the Jedi. And we've seen this whole new leap forward once Disney acquired Lucasfilm, that has seen like this movie, which is now by all metrics, one of the most successful and highest grossing movies of all time. And you've seen this. And as we're recording this, we're coming hot on the heels of Tony Gilroy's Andor season 2. And so we're before Rogue One, which had like promo images up. You know, we've still got a year until Rogue One is released, but we're before Rogue One. But we're 10 years since that movie was cast. And we're now at the conclusion of this. And really in 10 years, what did we learn is like that this series never lived up to the promise. This new trilogy never lived up to the promise of The Force Awakens, because whatever you think.
No, for whatever reason.
Like, for whatever reason. Whether you think it took a turn at Last Jedi, you think it took a turn at The Last Skywalker.
I think the turn personally occurred in The Force Awakens. I think Disney, Lucasfilm, whoever it was, should have kept the original cast together. Like, at least, everyone's saying it would have been easy just to put them all in the cockpit of the Falcon together.
Just
like
one thing.
Just one thing. Like, just, and have them like go off into like, you know, ride off into the sunset. They chose not to because there was a plan that to go, whatever. But, you know, that was sort of its, you know, for everyone who wants to come for The Last Jedi, the train had already left the station with its destination, for better or worse. But then you get to Andor, where it's painting in around the cracks of A New Hope. It's painting in around the cracks post prequels. It's set a new benchmark that, quite frankly, Star Wars may never be allowed to even go near again. It's almost impossible. But then Rogue One, if you think about Rogue One, is really, you know, taking a line and a half out of the opening crawl and going now. And anytime I watch now A New Hope and that line, you're reading the crawl and all I see is the Battle of Scarif. All I'm seeing is palm trees and X-Wings going by and the dish and, you know, Vader coming down that hallway and like the fear and the terror. And you're like, when they've just had their first victory and you're like, fuck, now, like, that is enriching an experience which is coming up very quickly on 50 years old in terms of, and that's reaching back, like we're reaching now back 10 years. This is now going back to 50 years.
Yeah.
Try taking that experience to your 20-year-old at work and saying, would you like to go back? You know, everyone always jokes that, you know, for us to go on about a film like that is like our parents going on about a film from the 40s.
Yeah.
And going, you have to get into this thing. It's incredible. And us going, are you out of your goddamn mind?
Like, not watching the Maltese Falcon. Get stuffed, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. And then I'm not watching a prequel television series making me feel something for Bogey in Maltese Falcon. I mean, I think the only problem for Andor, and I think the only problem for a lot of these Disney Plus TV series is, for better or worse on terms of quality, in terms of like there have been high highs and some low lows. They're fine. And overall, I think most things, except for probably 60% of The Acolyte, have been very watchable. Book of Boba Fett also, and Obi-Wan. They stumbled at times.
I would just say this is the first show actually I rarely talk about when I watch Star Wars because I'm sick. What we've learned in 10 years, what we can say, the heights we've learned in 10 years, the high heights, Andor season 2, and now this beautiful reclamation and reframing of Rogue One in the arc of the Star Wars tale, and how it so closely butts against one of the greatest movies that has ever been made and the most important pop culture artifacts ever. So important. The low lows is just the Star Wars fandom. Like, I used to say, like, be a diehard. I'm a Star Wars fan. I grew up learning about movies as so many people did, through understanding about George Lucas and understanding about how things are made and understanding about making of documentaries and all that sort of stuff is a gateway usually from like Star Wars. So many people were just like, Star Wars was like a sacred text. The fandom is so gross, and that's the low point. So I don't mention it, but like I've watched almost all of these Star Wars things that have come out, just passively kind of watch them. Some things I've loved, loved, loved. Some things I just are not for me. But I would just say like 10 years later, you could never have told me 10 years ago that a TV show that was a prequel to a movie that we already knew was coming out in 2016 at this point was going to be the best, not only the best Star Wars thing, but I would argue for me personally in the last couple of years, the best thing on television, the best thing going, this Resistance Rebellion TV show that's just using the Star Wars toys to tell a story that's as old as like the French Resistance, the Russian Revolution, you name it, like countless historic revolutionary,
South American sort of revolutionary,
South American, or you name it. It's just everywhere. It's like, it's telling this absolutely great story. And George Lucas said, you know, it's not unusual for us to tell these stories with these kind of politicized things where we're trying
A New Hope was about Vietnam, you know, like that's what these things were. Like they were meant to be sort of a middle finger from these sort of film school. Like these were the nerds and the outcasts and the people that were, you know, had friends that they lost in conflicts. And this was their way of sort of fighting back. The problem, I think, with, you know, for a lot of us that grew up, like you say, Star Wars was our gateway drug to filmmaking generally. And we were like, we knew in our heart of hearts it wasn't real. And then when you start to learn that, oh, it was done like this, and this pulley was created to make this effect, and then this, you know, and we've followed it, and then you learn, oh, this movie, when I'm six, can make me feel this way. Oh, what other films has this person made? And then you start to go down that rabbit hole. And I think that's when, you know, we're all around about the same age. And there's, you know, that's why I think over the course of this last 10 years, you've had this so many digital inches written about people going like, that's it. You know, they're mostly white guys and, you know, people going, you know what, guys, I'm finally like putting my Star Wars fandom to bed. It's not my thing. Because, you know, this thing cannot possibly evolve to, you know, to account for the 3,000 movies you've watched in that time, expecting it to be as evolved as we've all become. When you put something as simple as like boom, The Force Awakens, it's really like, oh, wait, you guys went back to good versus evil, and like the black guy wears black, the bad guy wears black, and the good girl is in like sort of white drabs and white drab clothes. You're like, yeah, it hasn't really come that far because it's staying true to the iconography of 50 years ago. Andor throws that completely on its head,
yeah,
without really disrespecting anything else in the, like, in the playground or in the toy box. It's like, we're over here, we're not really, you know, we're made with the same costumes and the same set design and production values, and we're just over in this little corner of the universe. And what's great is, and you know, I wish they did it, I wish you had a few more, like, a Mandalorian-style character just walking through the background.
Yeah.
Would have just brought, I think the only thing Andor misses is just like a little, like it's just missing a little bit of a Star Wars seasoning. Like it's a bit like, you know,
I hear where you're coming from, but this is the other thing that I love about it, is that like the most famous Jedi in the galaxy, being Obi-Wan Kenobi / Yoda, are in hiding. The Empire has been so successful, and in a lot of these other branchy shows, we've seen how that manifests as far as like who's still kicking around, who's still here, who's still there, etc. And what I love is the desolation and the disconnection, because when you control the intergalactic media and this stuff, it's like everyone feels disconnected. And so it's only in the kind of latter stages, no spoilers, where even the Force is mentioned. And like what I love in Rogue One, I will never not love Donnie Yen. I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me. I'm one with the Force. Like, I think it's one of the most powerful Star Wars scenes that I've ever seen, just because it's like this guy who was a protector of the Kyber crystals inside the lightsabers. And it's enough of that stuff that it's like, it just starts being sprinkled in towards the end of these characters that there are bigger destinies. And the other thing is, I think Andor reframes just the outlawing of the Jedi religion. Even it's like it's and so I kind of like, I, while a couple of other accoutrements could have popped up, I was like, it was so refreshing to just see what these isolated peoples who were being oppressed and then turn into factions because they all start doing things differently and all want to lead this gigantic cause, and you watch how slowly just the cream of the crops sort of come together and work out a way to organize, and then there are still weird extremists that are in their views, like Saul Guerrero, who we love. He's fantastic. I just, the rendering of this story, like I was being asked about it today. A friend was like, oh, I've been watching it. Like, what did you think of Andor? I go, I think it's the greatest show on television. And they're like, yeah, I'm just like struggling to get with it. Like, it's so hard and it's depressing and it's like this and it's moving slowly. And I'm like, I go, yeah, it is. I go, but resistance is hard. And you have to backstab and you have to kill people and you have to do awful things and you have to use the tools of your enemy to...
And they're like, you know, the Imperials aren't very likable. And you're like, the people in who in about an hour's time have a weapon that can blow up entire planets. They're not good guys. They're not good people.
It's like watching the Nazi movies. It's like, you know, these rascals, they've got some weird ideas.
And it's very funny, like, it, you know, it still resonates with modern day as well, because, like, you know, within the first couple of episodes of this new season, we're like cracking down on illegal immigrants, we're deporting people, we're like, you know, putting harsh things, and you're like, this is an American company. A publicly listed American company, Gilroy is an American citizen. Well, there are still people that are, even in there from their very safe corporate bunker, threatening to stick the middle finger up at the powers that be. And fuck yeah, shouldn't we have that? Like, shouldn't we have a little bit of those home
truths? It's a show. It's a show on Disney Plus that mentions active genocide. There's a, you know, an incredible series of performances that are in that show. And like, obviously, just for everyone who's listening, this was both intended and unintended that this entire Force Awakens conversation would be hijacked. But we're in the, what we've learned. What we've learned is what we really wanted.
And that's the thing. There is a then and there is a now. And the then was fine for when Force Awakens dropped and it got the John Williams music going again. We got lightsabers, we got X-Wings, we got TIE Fighters. But I think really that people want this, if we can go in and paint in this nuanced way through this world. And, like, you know, you'd hate to be Dave Filoni now, like with Ahsoka. It's just kind of like, you're up, kid. All right, like you can't come in with like,
and you may know the lore, but when your writing team, I'm going to read you the writing team of Andor, just the core group. So we obviously have Michael Clayton, Tony Gilroy, the man who is the creator of the series, who's the core writer, who's the, you know, executive producer, all that sort of stuff. Tony Gilroy wrote, obviously, Star Wars Rogue One. Throughout his career, he wrote and directed Michael Clayton. He wrote and directed Duplicity, which I think is absolutely terrific. He did the screenplay for State of Play, which is excellent. He did the screenplays for Bourne Identity and Bourne Supremacy. He did the screenplay for The Devil's Advocate, which has one of the greatest monologues of all time in it. He did Proof of Life. He's an amazing writer. Then when you have a look at the rest, so it's like, oh, okay, well, look, he's the showrunner. He's the head writer. Who else would write on that show? Well, funnily enough, you look at the next writers and it's like Dan Gilroy, Tony Gilroy's brother, Dan Gilroy, the writer and director of Nightcrawler, the writer of which I really like, actually. Roman J. Israel Esquire is a terrific movie, Velvet Buzzsaw. And so you've got these two brothers who are obviously extremely talented. Then you go down the list and you've got Bo Willimon. I'm just going to go to his resume.
And he's working on the new film from who's the guy that just did the most recent Indiana Jones?
The new James Mangold. So yeah.
Yeah, he's writing the birth of the Force movie, like the one set 25,000 years ago, if it ever gets made in this current Disney regime, they've left more films on the cutting room floor than just about any other studio in Hollywood.
Well, and Bo Willimon wrote The Ides of March, a terrific thriller with George Clooney and Ryan Gosling. Mm. He then wrote he was the creator of and a writer of 73 episodes of House of Cards, which Fincher co-created with him, then went on and did Andor. So we're talking about some of the best pedigree writers. And you got Dave Filoni, who is definitely George Lucas's key acolyte as far as his understanding of the lore and the worlds and the creation and the characters. But when you look at that, I'm like, these guys went in as key domain experts in resistance, political fuckery, all these sorts of things, and they went and wrote their absolute hearts out and just fleshed out a world between worlds that we didn't know existed. And for me, it's in 10 years, like, I felt a lovely jolt. I saw the Millennium Falcon. I saw Harrison Ford as Han Solo and Chewbacca back in 2015.
Yeah.
I heard John Williams' the fucking greatest of all time, by the way. No, John Williams' incredible score for The Force Awakens. And that was really heartening. And I was like, man, there's a lot of hope in this new series for potential how this is going to go. There's obviously flaws. But let me tell you right now, like, the next jolt, like true jolt that I felt like, oh my God, I think I've watching something that makes me feel even the tickle of that original trilogy is Andor. I watched that series and I'm like, this is the best thing that Star Wars has ever done, and it'll never happen again.
The new year is the perfect moment to set your family up for success, including finding a school that finally fits the way your child learns. Introducing K-12 powered schools, tuition-free, accredited online public schools for grades K through 12. With K-12, students move at their own pace, with state-certified teachers who bring lessons to life through interactive, hands-on technology. If your child needs a school that adapts to them, K-12 can help unlock their full potential. Learn more at k12.com/podcast.
The efficiency to do the four arcs with each episode, with the three being representative of a year, and not a year, but a year's taken place between them, to then boil down and go, some of those arcs take place over what could be a sort of an hour of action, and that's still somehow to weave in the representation of where all the pieces are on the chessboard. Like, it itself needs to be basically put up on a hoist and like hoisted up to be studied in terms of like the connective tissue and the, like, you know, this little bit of the bridge is going to put these things together and that'll structurally hold that up and this will link to that. Like, it is phenomenal that you're just moving them around and over that sort of 4 year period going, oh, that's then, that's this, it's the only, that's what I was going to say before. The only problem with all these series, and we've been the sort of the bane of my existence, I don't watch a lot of TV series as it is that there has been so much filler, like all these things, like, you know, a lot of them have been telling a, you know, a 4 hour story in 8 hours.
Yes.
A lot of the Disney stories, because, and that's corporate, that's sort of like this quote unquote golden age of television, which I think we're past that.
Yeah,
and there's just, you know, there are things like, you know, you watch an episode.
Sorry, not a golden age of television. Let's be clear. The golden age of streaming, where they could just take a movie, break it into 8 parts, and people would eat it. And it's like what so many people have figured out, that it's just like you are just padding these shows so relentlessly that you're making it shit.
Bill Simmons has done some great breakdowns, and there's a lot of people have. But like this thing that, like, they're almost designed now for you to watch on your phone. Like, you have your phone on, it's going on the background, and there's only going to be about 16 minutes of content in the hour, and you'll probably get it by osmosis over the top of your phone in that time. The problem with Andor is like, we're ditching that, and we are so dialed in, and every word,
you have to listen to every
matters.
Word, every
line. It's so dense. And the problem, I think, has been for a lot of these things, that the benefit that we had when we only first had the original trilogy, or we only first had the trilogy for Indiana Jones, is us as kids and as we're coming along, and I think more and more, I don't know if this is still happening today, it might be for much younger kids. Like, it wasn't crazy to think, but by the time most of us hit high school, we conservatively probably would have watched Star Wars maybe 150 to 200 times. And
easily.
I'm not being hyperbolic when you're
I'm not
like,
being hyperbolic
we
either,
didn't,
no way.
We didn't
Easy.
Have, we didn't, ha- we only had the, like, your 12 tapes at your disposal, and you watch those, like, that's all you watch. You just watch those. Now,
that was your carousel, your 12 VHS tapes.
I would love to have, I'd love to have at my disposal. Like, are you, you know, and you'd be the same. You used to sit with people and just go line for line through the trilogies, and you would just recite the script back and forth with each other. Like, you do it with your cousins, and you'd just be.
I fondly remember being with a mate, and I'd watched even the ones that I didn't love nearly as much. If you got me going with a few beers and straight between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, me just doing every Hayden Christensen line, like, at full tilt, you will not take off of it. Like, I love that shit. It was the best.
We don't have that familiarity with now, like, 7 seasons of TV shows, where you don't have that muscle memory of, like, this person's going to come left of frame and they're going to say this, then we're going to swipe to that, which is a shame for the franchise, because I think, like I said at the start with Force Awakens, watching it about 11 times was because you are going to burn it. You're going to burn it into your brain, and you're going to have that. It's just like in the Star Wars locker where it all goes and it all gets shuffled, my big Rolodex that it goes in there and gets bigger and bigger with every release. But I think it was something at the heart of the franchise, which had this obsessiveness, which is spawned from how all those years of the fandom being into it before all the sort of the sprinkling of all the culture war stuff over the top, which is just tiresome anyway. I don't want to touch on that, but it's that's my only problem with, like, these TV shows is literally like, Andor rocked. But when am I ever as a certain age going to find 12 hours again to, like, put myself in that headspace to burn through it? Put on A New Hope, put on Empire,
put on Rogue One, watch Rogue,
put them on, yeah, put them on it, you know, they're the type of thing you put on at like 9:30 at night, or it used to be back in the day, if they were on TV, no matter where you came into it, you were watching it to the end, ads and all. And I'm just curious, like, now that we've got the Mandalorian and Grogu movie set for next year, the Ryan Gosling movie set for the 50th anniversary, so they hit that deadline. I just hope that we're never going to get Andor level writing in a film. I don't even think Tony Gilroy in nowadays could write it into a movie because of all the quadrants. You know, you've got to hit the quadrants, you've got to hit this, you've got to hit that, you've got to hit all the things that suddenly make it become this monster that can't be anymore or can't satisfy, much to the detriment. But the next person that comes along next up at bat, I hope they look at this and go, okay, all right, because this is the standard. This is what we're going to be like. We don't want to be the person that took a step back from here.
And the big one is now, I haven't really done it in something that's like a trilogy before, the Deckhead Project. I don't know if anything's really touched on that. Like this year, maybe you could say Creed is a trilogy, I guess, broadly, but who cares? But first of all, great movie. Creed, fuck me. One of my favorite movies. In my top four on Letterboxd. I love that movie to pieces. Don't want to diminish any of that. I would just say this. What Star Wars is now, like remember, like when this movie came out, if you were like, this is not my Star Wars because you were a prequel kid, like a prequel psycho who like loved all of the, firstly, the Genndy Tartakovsky like cartoons that were on Cartoon Network, like the 12-minute shorts, and then loved the Clone Wars. And you were like a prequel kid and had a whole different view of Anakin and Obi-Wan and what those movies meant. There's that view of people. Then you had the older generation or like our generation who were the bridge. We were the bridge between both of those who were like grew up with them obsessively watching them. Home entertainment was huge. So we just like consume. And then we jumped into the prequel trilogy and we're like, oh, it's not our thing, but you know, it's Star Wars, so we like it. Right now, it's like there are whole swathes of the fandom who are like, sequel trilogy doesn't exist. Hate it to pieces. Some people are like, Force Awakens good, Last Jedi great. You know, The Rise of Skywalker, absolutely garbage. Some people are like, I've never watched The Mandalorian. Others are like, I love the first couple of seasons of Mandalorian. One season's okay. Some people are like, I didn't watch it. It's like, it feels like now when you look at just like all those shows, and I was trying to do it at the beginning of this episode to be like, since this movie, we had The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker, Mandalorian seasons times three, Boba Fett series times one, Obi-Wan series times one, Acolyte series times one, last season of the Clone Wars, like final season that Dave Filoni came back for, we had a Rebels sequel series. We also had Rebels. And then it just like, this thing just went bananas. And now it's like, the fandom is so vast. It's like, there's whole cuts of it that I'm like, I'm not interested and I don't care. Whereas like Andor for the first time is now something that I'm like, but I somehow care again.
Would you prefer George Lucas making nothing or Disney fumbling their way through and maybe finding the occasional gem? I think I'll always settle for maybe finding the occasional gem. Like I think
we just have to now accept that as a brand and as IP and Hollywood, et cetera, the thing that you can hope for or the thing that now people are going to be looking out for is like, look, you can't tell me that the Star Wars Disney experiment hasn't worked, because for me, genuinely, I do really like this movie. Force Awakens, I really enjoy, and I think it has so many wonderful qualities. And I personally really enjoyed The Last Jedi. And then there's just moments, there's these heightened moments in, you know, Mandalorian, which was so special in those early series. There's some really, I mean, Andor, as soon as Andor started, I was like, this is my shit so deeply.
It's elusive. Like, what is Star Wars? Could be a you know, strings of a violin. It could be a hallway. It could be a wipe of an edit. It could be so many things. And, you know, and that's, for me, the joy of it. Have you ever seen the Mario Maker series that Nintendo put out? That basically you can go... They brought out a game called Mario Maker, and they had all, like, there was a thriving community of people ripping off the original, like, Mario Brothers games where, like, you know, they would design their own levels and share them. So they came out with Mario Maker, and then they would, you could make levels where there are fireballs going around and you've got to have insanely difficult platforms to jump, and you've got to, and this whole community spread of people like, you know, sharing other people's levels and, oh, no one can beat this and the unbeatables. And then there were people making, no, it's got to be true to the original, and they were quite simplistic and you're just jumping over, and it's all done in the original sort of animation style of those sort of that first Nintendo classic, what, like 1986 or whenever it came out. And I'm always curious if Disney would ever, and you know, AI is such a dirty word, or dirty, two dirty letters, but it sometimes feels like, you know, you could almost give the assets over to the fan community and say, here's everything you need. Go make Star Wars and share it amongst yourselves and see what sticks for you and what doesn't. Because since day one, people have been doing it, shooting actual fan films. Like, I don't know if like fan films are still getting made for many other genres. Like, you know, some of the fan movies.
Oh, Star Trek, they all have these. And now the democratization of just filmmaking technology, I don't think you need to go, here's what you need to make it. They've got like light up lightsabers that bash together and make sounds. You can do sorts of things. Like I think I've sent the same video of two neighbors, like a wife walking out onto her front porch, and there's two guys like for having a lightsaber fight in the street. And I'm just like, so us or whatever. It's just like that sort
of shit. I could see them giving those, I could see them like giving over digital assets and going, here, knock yourselves out, because we don't quite know what Star Wars is either. I don't think you as a fandom have decided what it is, unless you are just deciding on an individual basis, because there's so much of it now. Like the fighting on most online is like, nah, I really like The Acolyte. Yeah, and everyone's like, you're a fucking idiot. It's terrible. It's this, and or it's and or nothing, or if you don't like this, you don't get Star. And it's just this meaningless banter that goes on back and forth.
And people going like, oh, it's Filoni. Filoni is George Lucas's heir, and anything that's Filoni is canon, and just, anything that's not like, Filoni is terrible. And it's like, Kathleen Kennedy ruined everything. It's like, well, she gave Dave Filoni a job, because basically after Clone Wars and George Lucas stopped owning Lucasfilm, he just left, and it was just like had nothing, basically.
We all become the nerds from like Simpsons who are like, you know, asking about like that episode of Itchy and Scratchy when the same rib was hit twice, the two notes were clearly different. I see all these things. Like I spent the dark ages of like Star Wars fandom between the movies going to bookshops, and all you were left with was like all like the Tales of Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunter books. I never picked them up, and I kind of want these Disney Fox series to be like that as well. It's like, sure, if you want to be a completionist, knock yourself out. Some of them are really fucking good. Others are hit and miss. You don't need to do it.
As long you as don't they have like to finish. I'm the big fan of this. It's so much easier for a movie for me to give you 2 hours of running time of my life. If I'm, exactly. Especially in, yeah. If in half an hour I don't like it, there's been plenty of movies where I'm like, I'm not sure in half an hour, but then like something happens and I'm all in, right? Whereas like I will watch an episode of TV, and if you can't grab me in the pilot, with respect and love, I'm not watching the show. I don't have time in my life to do it.
I said it for that new John Hamm movie. We were away watching it, and I got up to just grab make a cup of tea, and my dear mother-in-law was like, hey, should I pause this for you? And I was like, it's cool. I'm not giving this 9 more hours. Like that's, and they're like, oh, but we can, like, are you not, like, we don't have to watch it. I was like, no, have it on. Like, there's nothing... It is perfectly well made. Everyone is, you know, Spencer Tracy would say, they're hitting their mark and they're saying their line. That's fine. I'm not going to make room for 9 more hours of this. And the same can be said for these, you know, that's why I've liked this release schedule. Like these 2-hour chunks are just like, I'm watching a movie a week and then it's done. Fine. Yes. I don't expect anyone to do it, because it's a bit of a grueling watch on a Wednesday night to try and avoid things. That's fine. I'd like to now go back through and watch these again. Like going back to the beginning of Mando is great. Like working your way back through and hopefully go through again. But I don't know. I think, you know, it's never going to capture the joy that it captured. Like The Force Awakens, those opening nights were like, and coming out of it was like, I remember saying to my brother-in-law, like just with that sort of like, you know, when you first exchange sort of opinions with someone and you're like, that's good, right? Like, am I like his Star Wars, like after like everything with the prequels go like, no, you don't get it. It was great. Like, and, but this was like this tentative, like.
All of us who saw Attack of the Clones were all, for literally 96% of the movie, like, this could be the worst. Like, even though Phantom Menace, you know, I think a lot of people forget, it's like Phantom Menace aspirationally and as far as the ambition of like trying to tell a story on what it was telling, this like beginnings of fascism, was so fantastic, but it just didn't hit. But then you get to Duel of Fates and that fight and all of the editing and the sequencing and Anakin, yeah, you know, blowing stuff out of the sky. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is the coolest movie I've ever seen in my life. And then the movie ends and you're like, well, that kind of, in the wash, one profoundly amazing, exultant sequence does not make it a great movie. Like, it's kind of...
No, but also, like, Darth Vader doesn't say yippee because he got an early mark from work.
Yes.
Like, there were still things that were like...
No, there were so many other things that weren't great. Like, but I'm just saying, yeah, like, there's a couple of exultant...
You left on a high. You came out on a, like, raging high of, like...
Wow. You know. Double lightsaber fight. So amazing. And then, like, with Attack of the Clones, everyone was bored to death for, like, 95% of that movie. They see Yoda fight with a lightsaber and they're like... Like, I remember seeing a kid at school, he was a buddy who, and he, like, it was early days of mobile phones. And one day he was talking on his mobile phone to someone as we were walking past school, and he knew that I'd saw Attack of the Clones the night before. And he's like, he's talking on his mobile, like an old brick Nokia or whatever. And he's talking, he's like, da, 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 da. He's like, yeah, yeah. And he sees me and he just puts his hand over the receiver and goes, Yoda! And screams out, and then he goes back and keeps having his conversation. And I'm like, yeah, like that's kind of what people thought. Was like, yeah, it was pretty cool to see Yoda have a fight. That was sick. And then like Revenge of the Sith had probably the best and most consistent, cool, like good quality stuff in it, even though it has plenty of flaws too. But yeah, I remember this was a nice hopeful time. I was like, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe it's like you get these great filmmakers and great talented writers together and the great cast, and they continue the story and they expand it and they grow it and it turns into something else. And it just never lived up to this hope until now.
Like, again,
rebellions are built on hopes, Stu.
They are. And I'll go around, like I'll be there night one for the Mando, like when that, from the little snippet, the trailer that they dropped coming out of Celebration, the little like shaky cam one that we've all seen, I'm like, they might just pull it off. Like we might be back. Like it might work. And you know, every day can be Christmas Eve if you're a fan, if you want it to be. Like, yes. If you don't want to be like the comic book guy from Simpsons.
And you know what? I, as someone who never thought I would like publicly say it again, it's like I was just dying. I was dying for that final three of this series of Andor. I was dying for it. And I was like, you, I watched it in the middle of the day. I was working that day from home. I like took my lunch break and watched the first episode, got back into work. Later that night, I was like, sweet, I've only got two episodes to go. Like I had the blue balls of like knowing that I had two more to go and I couldn't break out of work and couldn't just watch it. And then I watched it with all that intent and focus. And then the second it was over, I've watched Rogue One like now three times. Like I just went bang straight into Rogue One. Like
it's
afterwards.
Got that magic. And
it's got a magic.
And it shouldn't work. The amount of reshoots that like that it was plagued with problems as well. Like these things need a bit of luck and they need a bit of magic. Like, you know, the original trilogy had it. They had things that didn't work. It's the it's cliche as it sounds. It's the shark not working in Jaws. They need like to be given the chance to sort of fail and be fixed up on the fly. And it's something that like these $200 million plus budgets don't really allow for the shabbiness that sometimes something like a Star Wars needs, because we've over the years overlooked the shabbiness and we don't want this like pristine picture. We want sort of rough edges and we want to paint and we want cracks that we can then explore later on. And I think Andor shows perfectly why, like if you can just find little snippets and little cracks. We don't, and at the same point, we don't need the, like, the worst of Star Wars is like you pause it and go, what's that guy's name? Oh, yeah, that's Jadula. Oh, yeah, what's his back? Oh, it's interesting, actually. There's a comic and a book and a, and it felt like Gilroy just went, fuck that. I don't care. Like, I don't care who's in the background. I don't care. You're not getting
no,
that
I care
out of
about
me.
Them
not...
if they're critical to the resistance and they have their own micro stories and they're there and they make up the tapestry of the thing, but they don't need to have been like plonkety plonkety from the planet Plonk. Like, who gives a shit? I'm tired of it.
You look at the Obi-Wan series, which had Vader appearing in full uniform storming in and trying to steal scenes, and you're like, oh, after about the third scene, you've sort of like lost your menace. We didn't need him in Andor coming in going, oh, and by the way, if you fuck up, you're going to come see me. We've just got him as this menacing presence that they don't even name.
And also Gilroy does the great thing of, like, he goes, there was a point where someone was like, do you have Palpatine come into the show?
Yeah.
And he goes,
no. It's
and he's too big. And also, it's so funny. Like, now Andor actually does this brilliant thing where it's like this wide resistance novel tapestry that's working and focusing with more and more characters to start. And it focuses and focuses and focuses and focuses and focuses to this last resistance who go and steal the Death Star plans. And then we get to the big dogs, the big players all coming together in the original trilogy. And, like, it reframes it in such a cool way because it's like, now it's almost earned you to get to the, it's like the serfs going all the way to the king. But, like, it takes that time to exhaustively go through. So now you're like, oh, I'm here. And it's not always playing out in these rooms of power. It's playing out in these dark alleyways. And it's like, that's where I want to live, is in those dark alleyways.
Well, exactly. And it's like in World War II stories, we were never expecting Hitler to be in every single meeting with the generals. These machines are actually more frightening if there's not the oversight and it's all of these people crawling over and backstabbing each other to see who can be
who
the
can
cruelest
be,
and the meanest and the most cunning and who can worst.
Curry his favor, right? It's like,
yeah.
What's exciting is then when you see a guy who's close to the emperor, the menace and gnarliness of that individual because of all the backstabbing and, you know, everything that they've had to do to work their way up. That's what was so, like, crazy about these fascistic or, like, these, like, regimes of power, these, like, oppressive dictatorships, etc. Is, like, the people. That's why, you know, Armando Iannucci's fantastic movie, The Death of Stalin, is so fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
It's because
they're either bickering children or they're sociopaths.
Yeah,
like, or both. Like, yeah.
Or they're sociopaths who bicker like the children.
Yeah, yeah. And that, like, it's a really hard thing to balance. And you also now see, you see remnants of that in A New Hope. And then you also see at the end of A New Hope, when they go to that, when they have the medal ceremony, you're now going to look around that room and go, fuck, I wonder if any of those people knew Cassian. Like, I wonder if they knew Cassian.
Oh, they
Nick,
knew.
So
of
I wonder
course,
if they knew,
of course,
like,
they knew Cassian.
They shared meals with them, and they did this, and now it's like we did it. Like, when we're walking around Yavin, you're like, that's when it's, you know, it's. I think it's really cool. Like, whether they do it, like, whether they can do it again, find another fertile environment to do it in the, like, you know, this. The Mandalorian has tried to patch up all of the sequel trilogy, you know, like, they've tried to go off and explore the cloning, so Palpatine's coming back and all that, and they've done a pretty good job at patching up to be like, okay, we'll come in
and they've tried to reclaim, we're trying to retcon,
yeah.
Yeah, and that's what the Clone Wars series does, it retcons huge gaps and things that happen in between movies, and I like that.
This franchise is so vast now, any one thing you're critical of can be justified by when it was done by someone you loved 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It's just, it's almost like you can almost defend it with itself, and all of its flaws have been put on display and its strength to the point that I hope it just keeps going. Like, I hope we get to episode 35. I just hope that there's a driving force to go, you know, much like we've just seen with Mission Impossible, maybe at the heart of it, this story is not that particularly interesting, and maybe it was never meant to be stretched corporately to all these things. And the next villains who are just going to be the next person in a dark mask coming up, it's really hard to make villains compelling and interesting, which again, Andor does so well, playing in the gray of that, that it just goes back to your bad guys can just be evil sons of bitches, and that's okay. They didn't have to be, they got away from the Disney model of like, yeah, they were, but they were wounded at a young age, and that, you know, if we take care of the trauma, then we can all be happy once again. And it's like,
so no, nah, power is power. Power corrupts, and people get into these organizations and hierarchies, and it's even like, you know, it's even apartheid South Africa. It's like, you know, when Mandela and Desmond Tutu and those guys fixed that issue once he was elected, they prosecuted a system because the system incentivized moral apathy and racism and awful things. And it's like, you can see the aspiration and how big the ideas that George Lucas is playing with, and then trying to rally this into like the stories that we speak in our culture and the fables that get carried through all of human cultures, you know, and the whole Conrad, hero's journey story that he collected through all of these cultures. And it's like, you can see this aspiration, and it's so amazing and it's so incredible. And it's like, but at the core of it is, people who want power, they consolidate it, they oppress, they push it down, they suffocate other people from having power, because that shared power becomes that. And he manifests that in all these sorts of lore. But what's cool about Star Wars universe is that, like, and what's still so cool 10 years later is that it's big enough. Like, I think that if anything in 10 years we learned that, like, some of the new series was so suffocated by a lack of imagination to expand the universe and to keep it on rails, where it's like, you would watch something like Andor and it's like, this is playing within the boundaries of this universe totally, but it is just expanding it in all these ways that the series has never had permission to do or at before. But staying away from those big things means you're not interrupting or disrupting canon. Just do whatever the fuck you want, and it's brilliant. And so,
and I think that the one of the strengths of Andor is it gets away from really, like, you know, most of the films spend a lot of screen time introducing a planet, like, oh, this is the desert planet, this is the forest planet, this is the all water planet, and here's some time about these people. Whereas Andor kept a pretty narrow scope about anywhere they went. You only ever felt like he was on borrowed time anywhere he went, in keeping with sort of the angst and the clandestine nature. Then he only sort of explored such little narrow patches, and we just got this like taste of everywhere he went, instead of burning too much time showing, you know, walking down marketplaces and showing all the knickknacks and everything that usually goes, like, you know, Force Awakens has it, where it's like, let's go and explore the marketplaces, and let's see the goofiness, and let's go and show the otherworldliness of it. This just sort of didn't waste any time. It was quite efficient in that sense. You know, like I said, for better or worse, with how much Star Wars it sprinkles throughout, like, you know, but then again, you see throughout that sort of the New Hope era, like, there is mostly white faces, and that is, you know, because of a product of its time, but also speaks to the oppressive nature that the closer you get to those seats of power, the whiter and whiter and whiter it's getting. And, you know, you're not expecting to see a quote unquote alien get to have the floor, which is kind of a commentary in itself. But and the other thing is, like, there's a great film critic, Kurt Halfyard out of Toronto, would say that, like, for kids, they're going to grow up watching the live action Cinderella with Helena Bonham Carter as the fairy godmother. And then when they grow up, they're going to watch Fight Club, and it's going to blow their fucking mind. And the same with this, that, like, there are kids that, like, watched Clone Wars and Rebels. They're going to get to this, and they're going to have a rape scene, and it's going to get called out. And it's like, it should be mature enough to have these conversations in a world where We have genocide. We have limbs being lopped off. We had like our hero killing people in cold blood. We should then be able to have those other conversations about conflicts and about oppression and about how women and children are usually the first victims in all of these things. And I was so happy that it's there to be able to have it and not like just, you know,
not lip service, not lip service.
No, but again, with like, if she hadn't have actually said it, the fanboys would be like, well, who knows what was going to happen? You know, you got to give, like, you know, not all men are evil and blah, 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 all the usual sort of culture bullshit that comes out of this. But for her then turn around and go, he tried to rape me in a Star Wars film.
Yeah.
Is like, that's kind of badass in a way that it's opening up those avenues to have those conversations. So Andor's pretty good. And if we had to swallow a Force Awakens, to 10 years later get to an Andor, I would go again in another 10 years to see
I'll go
what
again.
We get.
I'll go again. I completely agree. I think the main lesson that I have is that, like, I think the hope that I had coming out of The Force Awakens has delivered. It just had a bit of delayed gratification. It delivered in a different medium.
I also tongue-in-cheek say this, that, like, Star Wars is really hard to make. Even George Lucas could only do it well two or three times. So that, like,
Star Wars is so hard to make that its creator couldn't even make it good.
Exactly. Like, he didn't come out of the original trilogy then go, fuck, I've got the secret sauce. Like, and land each of the prequels in a way of, like, just like putting down his cards going, I've got the unbeatable hand. It was like, fuck, even you. Like, you feel like you haven't watched the original trilogies since they came out because so much of, like, it so contradicts a lot of the story and it's all been said before. But I'm like, it's fucking hard to land these. There's a reason people still study Raiders of the Lost Ark and Back to the Future. It's because they are this thing of, and Jaws, they're these things of popcorn entertainment, which is so fucking hard to nail that everyone is still striving to get there. And, you know, it's not always going to hit, no matter how many. Because, you know, as much as we say the creators don't care, I guarantee if you sit in the fucking halls of Lucasfilm, that's all they care about.
That's the only thing they care about.
That's only one thing they want is to recapture, like, what they had in.
They
want to
feel.
That's
they want
all they want.
The reason they're doing the job is because they love it. They're dying for it to be great.
And when it works, it fucking sings.
There's nothing
when it
better. There's nothing
you
better
just,
than a great, like, there's not, like, that's the elusive brilliance of movies is that, like, there are so many movies that are made and so many great movies by comparison, right? There are so many great ones. And there's just nothing better than a great movie. There's nothing that makes you feel better. Nothing makes you want to engage with art. Nothing makes you have bigger conversations about life. There's all this really naked and unguarded truth that can be in art. And it's like, there's nothing better because they're these things that are unbelievable video and photographic compositions with music and performance and dance and choreography, whether it's stunts or whatever. And it's, and the transformative aspects, and they're a time machine. And they're also these artifacts that for whatever reason, make us want to revisit them over and over and over and over and over and over again, 11 times, you fucking maniac. But I think I saw it 4 times, to be fair, in the theaters. But it's just that thing. You just, when there's nothing better, and they're just chasing the dragon. And even you can't always nail it. But man alive, this last decade has taught me that despite the roller coaster of Star Wars, in the last 10 years, there are two real big highlights for me is like this movie and then Rogue One, you know, doing the kind of like Marvel technique, at least preliminarily, where they started off doing like one for a new series and one that's kind of like a filling in the gaps of other stories that had been established. And man alive, I was, you know, this into Rogue One, I was so happy, and then it kind of took the weird turns that it took. But now sitting here talking to you 10 years later around the time, you know, we're not far away. It was released in December, so we're a few months away from its actual 10-year anniversary. But, man, in the last 10 years, it started with this.
Guaranteed. If this gets a re-release, the 10-year re-release, like Revenge of the Sith just got a 20-year, or yeah, 20-year re-release. If this gets a re-release on their fucking opening weekend,
yeah, I'll see it too.
Like, yeah, it's something to go back into, and you can roll your eyes. But I guarantee it's now hitting that nostalgic sweet spot,
yeah,
where people are going to start re-evaluating it and be like, yeah, it wasn't that bad. Yeah, let's give it a chance. All right, another 20 years. Okay, yeah, it's, all right, it gets, you know, and the ball rolls on, and then we're into, you know, we will hopefully live to see the 100-year anniversary of some of these films. That you're like, we're coming up on, you know, the 100-year anniversary of, you know, Wizard of Oz. You're coming up on these things where you're like, these are still the touchstones of popular culture, and for a reason, and they're going to maintain. Nothing's going to suddenly come and knock those out, because, you know, they're always going to get taught. They're always going to get handed down, like, from time to time, as I posted on my Insta story on the weekend. I hit my 78th week of trying to convince my daughter Star Wars is her favorite movie. I think I've learned. She wasn't interested, and then she saw R2-D2, and I'm like, okay, that's here. All right,
R2-D2 is a big, he's a great ace up his sleeve.
That's who, yeah, okay, all right, I'll keep that in mind. We might see some plush R2-D2 coming around the house.
I bought my son a robotic R2-D2. He lost interest in it. It's now in my office, because I'll never lose interest in R2-D2.
It now brings you bourbons like it does on Jabba's Sail Barge.